Discourse on Unlike Any Other Government by Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom. Episode 7, Borders and the Nature of Government. Borders. What is an illegal immigrant? The Immigration and Nationality Act prohibits non-nationals from entering or attempting to enter the United States at any time or place that has not been designated by an immigration officer. It also prohibits non-nationals from eluding immigration officers. Inspection and or authorization are required for entry. The U.S. Bureau of Customs and Border Protection and its mobile division, the U.S. Border Patrol, are responsible for apprehending individuals attempting to enter the United States illegally. Even with these laws and agencies, it is estimated that over 500,000 illegals enter the United States each year. There are three types of illegal immigrants. 1. Entering without authorization and inspection. 2. Staying beyond the authorized period for entry. And 3. Violating the requirements for legal entry. The first type accounts for over half the illegal immigrants in this country. Who enforces immigration law? Illegal immigration is classified as a misdemeanor and subjects the person to extradition. Under the United States Code, Title 8, Section 1103, the powers and duties of the Secretary of Homeland Security and the Attorney General of the United States have the authority to extradite illegal immigrants. There are an estimated 13 million illegal immigrants. Since the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, has over 60 agencies within its department with over 179,000 employees and a budget in excess of $28 billion, it is difficult to understand why the growth in numbers of illegal immigrants in this country continues to climb. It has become apparent that the DHS is not interested in supporting local law enforcement in attempting to stem the flow of illegals or to identify them for extradition. In fact, there are a number of large cities in the United States that have enacted laws protecting illegal immigrants within their boundaries. They're called haven cities. Not only illegal immigrants who flood the job market, even though they are criminals by being here, but drugs, weapons, and possible terrorists with the intentions of death and destruction are nearly guaranteed entry because of the negligence of the DHS and other responsible agencies. The abrogation of their responsibility under the law creates risk to the citizens of this country and provides a welcome mat for the continuation of illegal border crossings. Often employers are charged with a crime for employing illegal immigrants. The government and the agencies assigned to protect the borders, however, are immune from consideration of their failure to enforce the laws of the land. Though there are many cases for concern over what's happening in this country, only a few have been addressed here. Surely your concerns would fit into the above descriptions as nicely as those that have been included. The nature of government. Returning to John Locke and his philosophy of self-government, that which the Founding Fathers modeled much of the founding of this nation after, is worthy of understanding if we are to know enough about our government to understand what is necessary to return it to its proper role. Dissolution of government. We begin with the question, can government be dissolved? Governments can be dissolved by a number of means. What history shows us as the most common was forceful encroachment by a conquering army. The effect was dissolution of the government and subsequent dissolution of the society, for every nation is composed of both government and society. Generally, under these circumstances, society was disrupted and scattered to the winds. This form of dissolution has not existed for quite some time. Another form is when an enemy force dissolves government and replaces that government with a government of their own choosing. The result in this instance is dissolution of the government by nonviolent means and subsequent dissolution of the society, which is replaced through a slow transitional process by a society unlike the one that was the source of the original government. We must assume in this circumstance that the dissolution of government will necessarily take a forceful effort. The likelihood in modern times is that the dissolution of government and subsequent dissolution of society will go unnoticed until history is revised and that the transition is lost from existence without a notice of its demise. If the form of government within a nation has any form of representative capacity, the means by which dissolution may occur will take one of three forms. First, the executive may begin to arbitrarily impose his will on the elected representatives and the people. Slowly, the rule of law deviates from the original intent, and slowly the dissolution process occurs. There is also a dissolution of government by delivery of the people to the influence of a foreign power. Eventually, the legislative body finds themselves subject to a set of rules not of their making, but to which they must adhere, which again results in the demise of the government as was originally intended and the society as it becomes subject to that foreign power. Finally, there is dissolution when the trust bestowed upon the existing government is betrayed by whatever means. That trust, generally in the form of a constitution, forms a set of rules which the government is empowered with the belief that it will abide by such contract. Faith is necessary because there is a need to pass power to government so that it can conduct its business. Thus, the transition from Articles of Confederation to the Constitution. When that power is directed in violation of the trust, ultimately it will be used to dissolve the society. The question here is the government dissolved as well? The answer shall be forthcoming. How government is dissolved. Governments of the nature of legislative authority are created by and subject to the will of the people. They are creatures of the will of the people, and their purpose for existence is only to protect the rights of the people, to the extent delegated, for the preservation of property and the protection of life and liberty of the people. There is no other purpose for government whose authority is from the people. Then the preservation and protection of the people's lives, rights, and property. Once it is recognized that government has begun to deviate from its intended purpose and the delivery to foreign power is apparent, the people are more likely to presume that there is nothing that can be done to change that course. Many will accept that those chosen to legislate and administer are far wiser than they are and willingly subject themselves to the change that results in the conversion and dissolution. In any society, it is easier, especially so long as there is sufficient bread on the table, to allow the trend to continue, accepting that it is the evolution of government as it should be. Little do they recognize that what they are experiencing is tyranny in the same form that has imposed itself upon people throughout history. The despotic nature of government will advise them that they are freemen while they are, at the same time, wrapping the chains of slavery gently around their lives. This is a form of mockery that is little understood by most. What is understood even less is that not only have they the right to get out of it, but to prevent it. The protection of property being the most significant purpose of government, the powers given to the government must be limited to preclude any theft of property. When government, in an artful and crafty manner, begins to the slow and meticulous theft of property of the people, it has violated the sacred trust granted to it at its inception. Regardless of whether that theft is direct or indirect, the outcome will be the same. Government, then, when it does begin this process of conversion, dissolution of intended government, has breached the trust of the people. The people, however, have not lost their right to the fundamental liberties for the preservation of which the government was first formed. Instead, they have a responsibility to revise that form of government, to correct the errors, and to rewrite the contract to provide for the protection of the property and the rights of the people to be secured. Government-imposed dissolution. What can be done to prevent this form of dissolution? Surely a resort to force of arms against those who have been granted the authority to use force of arms in the preservation of property is not an easily undertaken measure. What would rouse the people to return their government to that place and to those ends for which it was first erected? Rebellion is the term that applies to those who seek to dissolve government and society from within. The determination of who the rebels and the usurpers truly are is the question that must first be asked. If the government has drifted from the course first intended, and after due notice continues to deviate even further therefrom, and in that process imposes force of arms against the very people it was created to protect, then that government, and all within it, have become the rebels. They are the ones that have sought to undo that which was first intended, and they are the ones that have resorted to armed force to impose their will upon the people. It is they who are guilty of rebellion. It is they who have created a state of war. Who is it that would suggest to the populace that any who said, who would denounce the actions of the government under the circumstances presented as being the rebel? Those very people who had been selected as our representatives for the purpose of protection of our property would proclaim that those who have found the need to protect their own fortunes are usurpers, the rebels. They would denounce them and accuse them of crimes against the state and against the people themselves. They would argue that these rebels must be subdued. Yet, who are the pirates, the robbers, and the thieves? If the innocent, honest man must quietly quit all he has for the sake of peace to those that would impose violence upon him for protecting his own property, what kind of peace will we be subjecting ourselves to? Violence would be maintained only for the protection of the robbers and the oppressors. The end of government is for the good of mankind, and what is best for mankind is that they not be subjected to this form of tyranny. The duty of government is to resist those evils and protect the people from them. The exorbitant use of government's power, when used for the destruction of that very society and not for the preservation of property of the people, is the worst form of tyranny that can befall mankind, for it comes of trust, and the result is slavery. When does one act to stop the tyranny? Most of the people will not be willing to believe all accusations made by those who proclaim the evils of government. Those who first recognize the tyranny will be scorned. When only a few stir against this tyranny, they are looked upon as mischievous and likely to seek their own ruin. Under the design of the despots, it has become apparent to a sufficient number that the greater numbers will be content to suffer rather than right themselves by resisting the tyranny. Who then assumes responsibility to correct the problem before the goal of dissolution of both government and society has been achieved? That determination is not one for earthly consideration. Simply, if the matter were cast before a court of the government, the ruling, without question, would be that those who support the dissolution are mistaken in their thoughts and criminal in their nature. Under these circumstances, the course is set and the goal of tyranny will be achieved. Those who oppose the course of government are incarcerated or killed. The only recourse that can allow a just consideration of action is the ruler of the universe, who speaks to each individually, but sets no mandate from which he can seek guidance. The judgment will come not in our lifetime, but when the final determination as to our destiny is made. History will tell a story, and the evidence of the actions must stand on the merit of the arguments presented and to the actions taken. History is as likely to condemn those who sat idly by as to look favorably upon those who sought to restore the institution for which they have cast their lot for the protection of their property. Each of us must make his own decision as to what course must be taken, though we must remember that those who would usurp the faith and trust granted them are the worst criminals that can exist on the face of the earth and should be treated accordingly. Punishment for crimes committed not only serves as a deterrent for future occurrence, but a just reward for those that commit those crimes. Whoever uses force without right, who does so without true law, puts himself in a state of war against those whom he so uses it. And in this circumstance, all former conditions of consideration cease to exist. All ties are canceled. All rights cease, and each retains the right to defend himself as he sees fit and to resist the aggressor. Moreover, he who resists, by that very nature of resistance, must be allowed to strike. Resistance only, when backed into a corner, is as cowardly as it is unsuccessful. We all consider that an inferior cannot push a superior, at least so long as he is the superior. When the state of war comes into existence, all former relations are canceled, and all respect and reverence for the superior ceases to exist. Since the original superior was the citizen who provided for the existence of government, for the preservation of property, that condition returns, and it is the superior who now comes forward to subdue the inferior, the usurper. What then may happen when the people may, of right, of their own authority, take up arms and set upon the government? Nothing can ever justify this form of action, for then, truly, the aggressor would be the rebel. Not at least as long as the government remains the government. The people can never come by power over the government unless the government ceases to be a government and divests itself of its authority. Only when the people must revert to the state of private man and bear the responsibility for the protection of his own property can they become free and superior. Each must judge for himself whether governments continue to serve as government or cease to be that government to which his allegiance is owed. Each must resolve in his own mind, in his own heart, and seek advice from heaven. Those who gave it can never remove the authority that each person gave as his share of the collective authority of government. It is the nature of community that requires that we all abide by that shared authority. Without that trust, that commitment, there can be no society, no commonwealth, no community, for that would be contrary to the original agreement and a violation of trust of our neighbors. That government can never revert to the people while the government lasts, nor should it divest itself of that authority. It assumes that government will last forever, for that is the purpose for which it was first created. When the miscarriages of those in authority have achieved a point so far removed from the original purpose, the government has forfeited its existence, and upon forfeiture, it divests itself and returns to each of its respective to each of us the respective share of its cumulative authority. Government reverts to society, and the people have the right to act as the supreme, to continue to legislate as they see fit, to erect a new form or to repair the old, assuring that when what has been learned has also been corrected. It is that state we are currently in. This ends episode 7.